This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The Rays Radio Network proudly presents This Week in Rays Baseball.
Diego ready to go with the first pitch on its way. Swing and a line drive left side of the infield. Fielded by Wendell. He made the catch! Rays win! Rays win! Rays win! And they're on their way to the American League Championship Series as they knock off the New York Yankees 2-1.
Coming up, we'll recap the action from this past week, take a look around Major League Baseball, and sit down for in-depth interviews with the biggest names in the game.
Just a swing and a drive, hit well in the air towards right. Mookie Betts going back to the wall. Gone! A first-inning homer for Randy Arozarena, number 10 of the postseason. It's 1-0 Rays.
Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Good morning. Welcome to our show. We'll discuss the big trade this week with Eric Neander and also Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, while Brady Williams will tell us more about Taylor Walls. We'll hear from Rich Hill about his terrific run of one run over 23 and two-thirds innings. Plus, we'll chat with prospect Alexander Ovais.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and time to take a closer look at the big move the Rays made this week involving the trade of Willy Adames to the Brewers. And joining us is Rays Executive Vice President and General Manager Eric Neander. And Eric, we appreciate a few minutes. Tell me how hard this move was to make and why make it at this point.
Really, really difficult. And we've made difficult trades before. They're never fun. They're never satisfying. This one was especially difficult just because of the quality of the person that Willie is. They don't come any better. And beyond that, obviously, from the moment he joined Bowling Green as an 18-year-old and ascended through our system, he's been a part of a lot of wins. And he's been in the center of a lot of ball clubs. And we wouldn't have accomplished all we have the last few years without Willie. So that makes it difficult, to say the least, and really just a matter of assessing, you know, our major league contributors on each side of the ball and some of those that haven't had the opportunity yet but are on our 40 and beyond, and just trying to figure out the best way that we can move forward and make the most of what we have.
A lot of times when you guys make moves of big pieces, they'll occur in the offseason so that, you know, time to settle, let's say, and adjust during spring training. This occurs in May. How much do you worry about clubhouse chemistry? I know how much you value it.
Yeah, and you had asked about the timing of this on the previous question. I didn't get to it. So, yeah, it's something that I think for us, we're trying to compete. We're trying to make the most of what we have and trying to improve any areas where we feel like we have a chance to improve them. And this type of trade is one where we're going to give up a major league contributor like Willie that means that much to us. We need to get things back that could help our major league team. This was just the time of the year where Milwaukee's needs are pretty clear to them. Our needs were pretty clear to us, and we linked up. So the timing of it and doing something in mid-May like this is certainly a point in the calendar where I don't think anyone's necessarily expecting a trade. You know, it's not late July. It's not the winter where speculation can you know, be drawn out for a while. It is something that, you know, runs the risk of being disruptive. You just try to own it. You try to be accountable to it. You try to be accessible to everybody in the clubhouse and provide them as much honesty and transparency to why we made the decision and trust that, you know, these are professionals. It's a wonderful group and that they'll fight their way through it.
Does that make it easier to make a move because you have so many good guys in the clubhouse? And obviously you saw the way they responded on Friday night.
I think it provides confidence that they can weather just about anything that's thrown at them, whatever it may be it a transaction, be it injuries, you know, and so on. But at the same time, want to make sure that's not reason to take for granted just how important it is to have that chemistry, to that camaraderie, you know, everybody pulling for one another. And you want to make sure you respect that. And obviously that was something we factored in, but still decided to go forward on this one.
How much of that also speaks to the confidence that you had in Taylor Walls, who made his major league debut on Saturday and obviously the other talented young switch hitting middle infield players that you have down in Durham?
Yeah, absolutely a factor. I think backing up, a moment, you look at our major league team and Yandy Diaz has played well on the corners so far, and a lot of his time has been at first. Joey's been wonderful over at third, and G-Man Choi's returned. And so, you're looking at different ways to get him in the lineup. We believe Joey can, handle shortstop and play it well. At times we're going to have Yandy at third and G-Man at first. So, you factor that. And then certainly we've got a handful of infielders in particular at Durham. Padlo's been up already. Taylor Wall's getting this opportunity here. Brujan, Franco, that's three middle infielders, switch hitting middle infielders that we have high expectations for as we go forward. And certainly less the immediate future, but certainly looking out over the next, couple months, couple years, that very much plays a part as we continue to try to craft this club to make it as good as it can be.
Was the decision to choose Walls over the other two speak to experience level, age? What went into the decision on this one?
That played a part. General readiness from feedback that we've gathered, back from the alternate site last year forward, the reliability he can provide. The defense is as good as you're going to see, but the bat has really come on and has, gotten a lot of at bats against some really good arms, internally at the alt site last year, this year, and out of the gates at Durham, and has done really well with it. So really just felt, based on merit, that he was the one that deserved his first crack and could handle it the best. And, to what I just spoke to with Yandy and G-Man on the corners and Joey's flexibility, I think just having a defensive profile or somebody that's as good as Taylor is on that side of the ball can complement some of the other things that Cashew likes to do with the group during games as well.
You mentioned the need for pitching. How much of that is, you just had the injury to Cody Reed and he's now on the 60-day. You've got Chaz Rowe and Oliver Drake and Nick Anderson sideline and Chris Archer, and you're not quite sure when or how well those guys are going to come back in an odd move from 60 to 162 games. How much of that figured into this?
It was a factor. I think you never know on the pitching side. It's a war of attrition. And, we have a lot of guys out. We're optimistic that some of them are going to be coming back, less so on others. But we'll figure that out when their time comes. But we certainly understand how important pitching is, both length and shorter options, and how important depth is in those areas when you're trying to compete, and especially going back to 162 games. So being down some of those key members of our group absolutely played a role, and just as much of it was between Fire Ice and Drew Rasmussen. These are two arms that we believe are on the come, and their best is ahead of them. And when we see guys that we really like, we try to do our best to acquire them.
Let's touch on J.P. FireEyes first, since he has already joined the Rays. What makes him special? How does he complement what you already have in your bullpen?
I've seen a lot of improvement from J.P. dating back to spring training and carried into the regular season. And it's three plus pitches. The fastball, by today's standards, clocks at a pedestrian 93, but has elite carry, elite ability to ride up of bats and miss them with pitch life as opposed to just velocity. The breaking ball is a swing and miss pitch. The changeup is a swing and miss pitch that has really high-end characteristics itself. And for someone that's walked as many as he has, just spent a lot of time evaluating his film, the data, believe that he commands the ball a lot better than his walk rates suggest to this point in his career. And we can clean that up a little bit, I think. He'll have plenty of business being in the back end of our pen and taking on a lot of high leverage opportunities.
Is the fastball, is this like Colin Pochet type fastball for something that doesn't have the great velocity? Is that comparable just from the right side?
I suppose. I mean, he's got the riding action like Colin has. I'm still adjusting to the fact that a 93 mile an hour fastball, 93 and a half, whatever it may be, doesn't stand out, on the back end of pens right now. But yeah, I mean, he rides it as well as anybody. So he certainly fits in with that group of pitchers across baseball that can really lift it above bats.
And obviously you drafted Drew Rasmussen. You weren't able to sign him. He ends up being redrafted by Milwaukee. How has he looked in his comeback from the latest Tommy John?
He's looked great. He looks like the pitcher that, the abilities that we envisioned him having when we drafted him. Obviously, unfortunate circumstances around that, and it didn't work out. But Drew got himself fixed up, went through the rehab process again, and attacked it the way that, knowing him, we knew he would. Thankfully, he's been strong, you know, ever since getting on the other side of it. So we're excited to have him back. And it's, you know, one of those things that our knowledge of Drew really helped us in this deal and our confidence. And Paul Kirsch going back to Oregon State, the work he put in, Rob Metzler, our scouting director now, the way that he handled everything around the really challenging situation with Drew and that not coming together, you know, all that work played a key part in us having the confidence that Drew getting past his previous hardships and where he is today. This is a good one to bet on and to stick with. And he was more than happy to be back here with this organization, you know, a few years later.
Is he a multi-inning opener? Is he a back-end reliever? Is he a bulk guy? Or are you guys going to try and figure that out?
The latter. We're gonna spend some time here to learn him and want to do some of that, you know, in an environment that's not the major leagues. And so we're going to get him a AAA, you know, reacclimate with him, make sure we have a good understanding of where he's at, how he's bouncing back, what his preferences are in an environment that, like I said, is not the major leagues. And we're not throwing that all on him while he's trying to get out to the major league level. So we're going to take a little time to, you know, to see how our knowledge from a distance, you know, and while he's wearing another uniform checks out once we get him in the door and what he gives us directly. And we're going to go with an open mind. This deal was made because of the arm talent itself and, you know, think he has the ability to impact us in any role he takes on. So this deal wasn't contingent upon him being a starter, being a power reliever, whatever it may be. So pretty open-minded. He's shown here that he's plenty capable of, when he gets shortened up, of bringing power stuff to the table and getting out in that capacity if that's ultimately where we decide to keep him.
Eric, thanks again for a few minutes. We appreciate you coming on.
All right, Neil. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Tremendous perspective from Eric Neander on a big trade. Joining us now from Durham with a closer look at Taylor Walls, his Bulls manager, Brady Williams. Brady, thanks very much for being with us.
Neil, how you been?
Good. Obviously, it's been a hectic last 48 hours for you, I'm sure, too. How did you deliver the message to Taylor, and in what way did you do it?
It happened really quick because of the time frame of, I guess it was a media was wanting to know what was going on with Eric. And so I had about a 10-minute window once I found out the news. And I was actually throwing batting practice in Durham, stopped BP, and just called everybody in. We're on the middle of the infield grass. It took a while because actually Walls was inside getting some treatment on his knee because he wasn't playing yesterday. He was just he's fine. He's there's nothing wrong with that. But it took him a while to get out there. Finally got out there, and I just kind of told him how an organization doesn't make deals like this all the time. And I want to let you guys know that we decided to trade Willy Adames to the Brewers in return for a couple of pitchers, and that obviously affects some guys here. And one of you guys are going up, and it could be many of you guys going up at this moment. It's Taylor Walls, and everybody went crazy, man. It was a pretty awesome. It actually got more emotional than I thought it was. It was a big moment for Taylor and excited for him.
I mean, he just had his first child this month too. So that's all in kind of everything going on at once in your life.
The ironic thing is that yesterday was supposed to be the day that his child was supposed to be born. So that maybe is why it was a little more emotional too, but a dream come true for him. He's a dad now and he's a big league player. So he's ready.
You've gotten to know him. Tell us why you think he's ready and what makes him special that you've seen over the last 2 years at the alternate site last year and then this year and in Durham.
He's one of the most driven players that I've been around. And that's every day. He brings energy every day. He brings effort every day. He's very structured in what he does. He has a plan every day of what he wants to do. He's a really good defender. He can play shortstop. He can play second base. He can play third base. Stick him anywhere on the dirt. He's going to make plays for you. But last year at the alt site, him and Dan Dement, our hitting coordinator, really focused on him driving the ball more offensively and to get his speed off bat a little higher, not a ton, but the focus was on that. And they accomplished that. There was a lot of focus and on just swinging harder. And he did that, and it's translated into what he's doing this year. Obviously he had a couple home runs, but he's driving the ball more consistently, really good at bats. And all the other stuff is just gravy on top.
Let's go back to the defense. I've heard people compare him to a Kiermaier on the infield. Is he that good defensively?
It's hard to praise somebody that much. You're putting that up there as one of the elite players in the game. As far as up to this point, he's really, really good. Now, is he going to continue to do that at the highest level? I hope so. I don't see why he wouldn't, given the opportunity. But he's a very talented infielder, for sure.
What makes him such a gifted defender?
Hands, feet, arm. He gets the good hop. He's similar to Kevin, how when they think about the game of baseball, they dream of making like defensive plays. A lot of players dream of hitting big, getting big hits or hitting home runs. Walls thinks of plays before they happen. And so when he makes them, it's not a surprise. He was already thinking about doing that last night, and so he's just a defense. He loves playing defense and he's really good at it.
Obviously he's a rookie. He's in his first week in the big leagues. The Rays lost a big clubhouse presence in Willie. How will a guy like that fit in personality wise into a group?
You don't know. He'll find his way. He's not a real outspoken individual when you first meet him, but as you get to know him and you get around him, he is one of the funniest, carefree, kind of cut up players there is. He'll shoot it straight. He's not afraid to check players and kind of tell them how it is, because he can do that. He brings it every day. Like I said, he's not going to change who he is based off what's going on. And so it's going to take some time for him, but he'll find his way. And the goal for him right now is to go up there and help the big league team win games.
He's part of a unique group. You have all these talented switch hitters that can play in the middle of the diamond. What side is his stronger side? What side is the power side? How are they different?
It's a good question, because I've seen him good both ways. And I actually thought left-handed was not as good as right. But watching him for the last, 2 months or so, it's almost flip-flopped. His left for me is better than his right. And I think he might always be like that as a hitter. He'll have moments where he's better left-handed than right, and moments where he's better right-handed than left. And that's the life of a switch hitter. As I struggle with that for a majority of my life. He's good, but in both ways, just depending on where he's at.
And how about as a base runner? I've heard good things about his ability to run the bases overall.
From what I've seen, yeah, it's good. I mean, he's advantageous, maybe a little jittery out there as far as trying to do too much, but that's just him wanting to get to the next base and score a run. But overall, he's a headsy baseball player and an advantageous base runner.
Your job, I always think, is the hardest, managing AAA, because you've got guys who've been up, who've come back, who are hoping to get there for the first time. How much conversation do you have to have when it's Taylor chosen with Vidal and Wander? I saw Vidal put out a very nice tweet, and I know that he has a good relationship with Taylor. But how challenging is that for you as a manager?
I mean, you would think it might be difficult, but the way these guys are and the way these guys have kind of been around each other over the last 2 years, they become like brothers. And they were so happy for him. And I think if it was either Brujan or, Franco or J-Lo or Sullivan, if it was any of these guys, Walls would have been just as happy for those guys going up. And so it's kind of a brotherhood. They also know that their time's coming and they're going to join Walls at some point, whether it's this year or next, because they know that they have a really good group here and they're excited to go and compete in the big leagues.
Well, continue to enjoy managing some of these kids. Thanks for sharing some thoughts on Taylor and his development.
Yeah, good talking with you, Neil.
And that's the Durham manager, Brady Williams. We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball. Coming up, we will hear from prospect Alexander Ovias and also Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times with more on the big trade this week and the terrific run by the Rays, 9 wins in a row. We're on This Week in Rays Baseball. We're back after this on the Rays Baseball Network.
On air and online, streaming live on iHeartRadio across Tampa Bay, this is Rays Baseball on 95.3 WDAE and AM 620, the home of the Rays.
We continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and it's time to take a look at the minor leagues. And joining us right now, a guy who had probably the biggest game so far of any Rays minor leaguer, that's Alexander Ovias, who had 3 homers and 10 runs batted in a game for Charleston recently. First of all, welcome to our show.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it, Mel. How you doing, man?
Good. Tell me what it meant to have a game like that. I would imagine that's the best game you've ever had at any level.
It was something that I couldn't imagine. I wasn't thinking about it because I was like struggling, but my teammates were like holding me up every single day. Like, you can do it, because you're not getting hits. It doesn't mean that you're not a good hitter. So I was like, I'm going to just play my game. Let's just have fun today. And they happened, when I was like in the last inning, I couldn't realize how big was the game. And when I hit my last homer, I was like, wow, I just have 10 RBIs today.
Can you walk us through each of the at-bats and tell us what you remember about the 3 home runs?
Yeah, it was in the second inning, my first AB. The game, I think I don't remember, but I think we were like tied the game. In the second inning, I just walked through the home plate and I'm like, let me just try to get this guy on the scoring position to see what can I do. Ran on first, and then like three pitches after, it was a homer, like left field. And second AB, I hit a ground ball to first. So I'm like, it's good. I'm on for two. So it's a good day anyways. And third AB, men on first and second. I know the pitcher was scared to throw me strikes. So I was like, he doesn't want to come in, but the catcher is going to tell him. And bang, slider inside pitch. And I hit a homer again, two men on bases. I had already five RBIs and it was just the third inning. So I was like, man, this is a great game. Next AB, I hit a single up the middle. My fourth AB, it was bases loaded against a lefty. He was like struggling to throw strikes. First pitch, he comes up with a super high fastball and I swing at it. I was like, I know I'm ready. So, and then one pitch after, he comes with a fastball and I hit a single through first and second. So it was two RBIs more. And in the last AB, it was a nine, but I was like, am I going to hit again? Like, what's happening? Because it was two outs, no men on bases. And then I move my head and start talking with the guys and it's bases loaded. I'm literally on deck AV. So I was like, let me get ready. We never know what's going to happen. And then bang, last AV. First pitch was a fastball. Second pitch was a breaking ball. It was no ball, two strikes. But the pitcher made an error. Like he threw me literally the same pitch as the second one. So I was like, this is my pitch. Let's just hit a homer. And I hit it out too.
What does a game like that do for your confidence?
It goes super high because I was not expecting it, but I know I'm a good hitter. So it was like, I got my confidence back because I'm getting my hits, you know, what I deserve. It was like 100%, like from nothing to everything. Like, it was just one day.
And you mentioned you weren't getting results, but what I had heard, you were getting a little bit unlucky before that game.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair. Like I was hitting a lot of balls, like a lot of barrels right by the defense. So I was like, I can't do nothing about it, but I'm actually like upset because I'm hitting the ball and I'm not getting anything back. So
tell me, you were one of a few players that came to the race in a trade with Texas for Nate Lowe. Were you surprised about that? And how's your experience been so far?
I wasn't surprised because this is just this is baseball. You know about today, but you don't know about tomorrow. So it was like I already got traded before. This is a new team. So if I'm going over there, that means because they care about me. So let's just keep doing what I do. Let's keep being myself. And from that day to now, it's like, you know, amazing experience. A great time with my teammates, you know, and a lot of guys, a lot of talent, you know, a lot of like good vibes and energy. So I really like it in here.
Now, you did come with a couple of players from the Rangers organization. Did you know Roberto Hernandez well before you got traded? And what's the friendship like between you? And does that help get you adjusted to a new place?
Yeah, it helped me a lot because I know, you know, he was my friend from a couple of years ago. So I was like, I know I'm going with like two of my friends that I know in here. Like everything is going to be all right for the first couple of days. I know them. I know we can hold each other accountable. So let's just keep moving. I know it's going to be the first trade they get. So I got to help them and let them know that everybody cares about Danny here.
And what has it meant to you just to be playing again on a regular basis? Because last year for you and so many minor leaguers, there were no games because of COVID. What's it meant to be playing again?
It's a great experience because last year we didn't play. So everybody was like getting ready. We couldn't play. But at the same time, it was like everybody was growing up on their mind, their body. So, you know, this year it's not going to be much harder because everybody's actually ready. But a lot of people is ready. You know, everybody was expecting this to happen again. So here we are.
How did you get yourself better? How did you stay in shape during the pandemic?
It was like same routine every single day. Just try to work out in the morning, take a rest for a couple hours. And by 3 or 4, I was just every single day just going to practice with my friends, you know, try to be in shape because I didn't know where we were going to get back. So I was like, I don't know if we're going to play a game, but I got to be ready. I just got to keep my mind in shape, same as my body.
And in terms of this race organization, so far, so good. You're enjoying the coaching. You're enjoying the players.
Yeah.
You're enjoying the group.
It's an amazing experience, like I said before. Like, you know, everybody cares about you. Your teamers are great, so nothing more to ask.
We're learning a little bit about you as we go. What do you see as your greatest strengths as a baseball player?
I don't know. I just try to be always, like, keep the things to myself. When it comes to games, I like to have my own, like, routine and stuff like that. You know, everything I try to do always and everything, like, game every single day. I try to always have fun with my friends, my teammates. Doesn't matter if it's a game or practice. So I like to have everything under control. So when it comes to games and, like, stuff like that, I've been here before.
Well, I hope there's a lot more successful games and weeks ahead for you. And we've appreciated getting to know a little bit more about you on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Appreciate it, man. Have a great day. Thank you.
And that is Alexander Ovias, who had a 3-homer, 10 RBI game in the Rays minor league system last week. Before we continue, why don't we pause for station identification on the Rays Baseball Network.
WDAE St. Petersburg, W237CW Pinellas Park, WBTP HD3 Clearwater, W224BE Brandon, and iHeart Radio Station.
Yael Solon's with you on This Week in Rays Baseball, and time to take a look at the week gone by. And joining us now to talk about what obviously has been a successful week, but certainly a busy one, is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Mark, you've been around win streaks. This is now tied for the second longest in franchise history. What has impressed you the most about this group during this stretch?
Well, Neil, I think a couple things, and one that stands out, obviously, is, you know, we talked about the resurgence of the offense. They were quiet for so long. They were struggling for so long. A lot of questions, a lot of fair questions about why they weren't hitting, especially with runners in scoring position. And that's obviously what sparked this turnaround. But I think, you know, if you look in those nine games, I mean, the couple that were separated, but even the last couple here in Dunedin, it was really as much the relief pitching and some of the other things that are more symbolic of the Rays, what they typically do. And I thought Kevin Cash summed it up, you know, after Saturday night's game, where he said, you know, everything is kind of working, all departments. And that's usually how it works when a team goes off on a nine-game streak. And you're right, only twice before. They also won nine in the 2014 season, which was kind of a disappointing year overall. And then they won a franchise record 12 in the 2004 season. To give you some perspective, that was considered a breakthrough year, their most successful year, when they won all of 70 games under Lou Piniella. Think of how far this franchise has come now, where playoffs and World Series have happened twice now.
Yeah, so in terms of the Kevin Cash era, it is the longest win streak. And in the midst of it, obviously a lot of change. Give us your take on, you know, when the Willy Adames news came down, what your initial take was, your thoughts, and as you've started to digest it, how you felt.
My initial take was that I was going to stay at the Panera Bread I was working at a lot longer that day, because I was halfway between home and Dunedin when the Zoom calls were going to start, so I pulled in there. Now, look, I mean, a couple things, Neil. One is, I was not surprised Willy Adames was traded. I was surprised Willy Adames was traded this soon this season. I think we all knew at some point that was going to happen. I think Willie knew that was going to happen at some point. He said he thought maybe at the end of the year. I think maybe sometime during this year was more realistic. But you don't often see, you know, quote-unquote baseball trades between two, you know, contending teams, talent for talent, in mid-May, and that's what we saw. So I do think that was a little bit surprising. I think the other surprise that people around baseball had was that Wander Franco was not the guy called up. But I think those of us that follow the Rays and know one more closely than you, especially the development of players through their minor league system, knew how highly they thought of Taylor Walls. Many in the organization thinking he was the best defensive shortstop they had, even when Willie was here playing at the big league level. And also the more advanced of the three guys of Franco, Bruján, and Walls. He had the most experience and a little bit older, played in college. There were a couple different reasons that factored into this, but mostly that he's a really good player. And I think we saw that in his debut on Saturday night.
No question about that. And not only was it an impressive debut, but I thought, and maybe you've thought the same, he handled himself really well.
He did. He handled himself really well. And, you know, we find out, you know, this morning that he had, you know, 30 friends and relatives who made the drive down here. We, you know, he shared with us before the game yesterday the really kind of cool story, Brady Williams gathering the Durham team on the mound on Friday once they had the news, and then kind of making a group announcement, and the team, including Franco, including Bruján, mobbing Taylor Walls and showing how happy they were for him, and just a whirlwind. This guy's, you know, we forget sometimes, these guys are real people too. He has a wife. He has a one-month-old baby. His parents had just driven from their Georgia home to Durham, and now they had to get down here. So he had all kinds of logistics to deal with, and, you know, everybody took care of what they needed to. Taylor Walls got here, said he was a little nervous in his first at-bat. Then we saw him lace a double his second at-bat. Then he comes back up in the ninth, doubles again. We saw the speed on the bases. We saw the defense. Sure, the one error. But I think if you watched that game last night, you had a sense that he's a pretty good defensive player and why the Rays think as highly of him as they do. And I didn't know he was as good of a base runner and as fast as he was. So that was something that I learned last night as well.
And not only that, we got to see one of the pieces that the Rays got in this trade. And obviously part of the reason they made this deal, Mark, is because there is going to be a tremendous need for depth of pitching. And we saw JP Fireisen last night, and he looked pretty good in his inning too.
He did. And, you know, we're still trying to figure out, you know, what it is that makes him so effective. He's got a fastball that only clocks 93, 94. Although, as Mike Zunino pointed out last night, the first pitch came in at 95. So there was like so much for scouting reports on that. You know, maybe a little pumped up. Maybe the gun here is a little hot. But I think you saw the control. You saw, you know, there's a little mystery to this fastball. And I know you and I were both trying to get Kevin Cash to talk about it yesterday. And he kind of shut us down as far as not wanting to give away scouting reports. But as you know, suggested, maybe it's a little like Colin Poche from the right side where, you know, we heard that was kind of a ball that kind of got up on hitters quickly. It looked faster than it really was. It was hard for them to hit. They kind of swung through it. And that seems to be a little bit of the success and the reason for Fireisen has done what he has done to this point.
How important was the win on Friday night, Mark, in light of, you know, we don't have the benefit of being in the clubhouse anymore. However, I've got to imagine that it's fairly important to win a game like that right after Willie Adames was traded.
Well, no doubt, Neil, because that was a very emotional day for the Rays. I mean, we heard from enough people, and you know, I talked to Willie directly, and you know, he was crying, and he said he wasn't the only one crying. That several of the other players were upset. We know how much of the fabric and core and emotional leader that he was to this team and the role he played. You know, not just in the game. So I think there were a lot of guys upset, and look, they all have to be professionals. They all have to, at some point, accept that, you know, that's how baseball works. It's a business as well, but guys were down, and if they lose that game, and let's say they play the same game, but they lose it in 12 innings instead, it becomes a really long, tough, frustrating, miserable type of day. Instead, they win it in 12 innings. They feel validated for some of the things they did, and it turns out to be a happy day. So, you know, does it mean a lot? Does it mean they wouldn't or would or would not have won on Saturday because of what happened Friday? Not necessarily, but I think it's fair to also say that that certainly put them in better spirits given how that day had started.
No question about that. And they're doing all this really still somewhat shorthanded. I mean, when you consider how much pitching they get Michael Wacha back today, they're still missing a lot of arms on this group.
They are, but you know, I guess the other side of that is, you know, they have filled in with a couple pieces. You know, we saw them trade Hunter Strickland. We were surprised. Maybe they knew that the deal with the Brewers was a possibility to replace a couple pieces that way. But, you know, what happens when some of these guys come back? I know Kevin Cash and Eric Neander and their staff will say that's a good problem to have. But, you know, there is, you know, the expectation that Nick Anderson's going to be back at some point. We saw Chaz Rowe and Oliver Jake throwing off the mound during the last homestand. We know Chris Mazza is now active and at Durham. We certainly know there's some other guys at Durham. Brett Honeywell was here for 2 days, didn't get in. He's available. So there's some other options as well, but there's guys getting healthy. And I just, you know, I think the Rays will be happy to have that issue. You don't have the fully expanded rosters, right? They just go up by two in September this year. So I'll be curious to see how they pick and choose and who they activate and who's healthy. But I think they're much happier having that many choices and having the depth, as you say, than scrambling around as they have had to do at other times.
And I think the other story this week that happened, Mark, beyond the trade and beyond, you know, the roster management that the Rays are going to have to deal with going forward, is the fact that from an offensive standpoint, the return to G-Mon Choi, I think, has made a big, big difference in this group. Your take on that?
No doubt. And it's been amazing, to be honest with you. I mean, for a guy that really didn't get a lot of spring training, and I think it's fair to say just did okay on his rehab assignment. I mean, we saw the numbers. You know, we know Kevin Cash said the reports were relatively good from Brady Williams, the AAA manager. The G-Man looked like himself. But I think just the fact that he's come back with the discipline at the plate, I mean, we've seen him take some really close pitches. We've seen him work some walks. We've seen him, you know, when he does swing, get off some really good swings. So I've been really impressed. You know, for a guy, like I said, didn't have a lot of spring training, wasn't in great shape when he came to camp, had knee surgery, so he obviously wasn't getting a lot of conditioning, at least initially. So I think what G-Man Choi has done, and look, he just brings a certain joy, and there's an esprit de corps when he's around. You know, we've seen him just these last couple of days in Dunedin. The fans here were doing the G-Man Choi chant. I don't know if Becca can do that for you and add it to the show, but, you know, just having that atmosphere, and then he entertains the fans, throwing balls to the fans, you know, responding to them. He gave Taylor Walls a big hug yesterday when he came on the field for warm-ups just to kind of welcome him. G-Man Joy just brings an energy and a spirit to this team that I think, you could also suggest they missed a little bit.
No question about that. And Mark, for folks who haven't, and I certainly welcome to do so, what's the focus today in the Tampa Bay Times on this Sunday?
Well, Rays tales, as usual on a Sunday, Neil, and I always appreciate you bringing it up and, kind of asked the question a lot of people around baseball are asking, which is what's up with all these no-hitters? And then the Rays certainly were experts on no-hitters a number of years ago. Remember, twice in the 2010 season and once in 2009, so three times in 140 games they were no-hit. So they've seen it from that side. They threw their own one and only no-hitter in the 2010 season as well, Matt Garza. So, I think the general consensus is no one's exactly sure. As Tyler Glasnow said, if I'm a hitter, I'd wonder what's going on. Brandon Lau made a great point in the article, I thought, which was we're seeing hitters adjust on the fly, literally during the season, that launch angle, 35-degree swing with the new ball isn't really working anymore. It's not getting that ball out. We're seeing guys try to hit line drives again and trying to adjust as the season goes on. And then you obviously mix in the number of power arms and the depth of power arms throughout the game.
Mark, really good stuff. I hope people do take a look at that and certainly appreciate your coverage all week on Willie Adames. And thanks for coming on this week in Rays Baseball.
Anytime, Neil. You know it's always a highlight.
There you go. That is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times joining us on this Sunday. And certainly you can check out what he's tweeting about as well at TBTimes_Rays. Coming up on this week in Rays Baseball, Rich Hill. He's allowed one run, his last 23 2/3 innings. You'll learn a lot more about him when we come back. Thanks for being with us. This is This Week in Rays Baseball on the Rays Baseball Network.
This is the home of the defending American League champion Rays, 95.3 WDAE and AM 620.
Well, we continue on This Week in Rays Baseball, and our feature guest this week is someone who is new to the Rays, but certainly familiar to baseball fans, and that is Rich Hill. Rich, thanks very much for being with us.
Neil, thank you for having me on.
You have such a unique background, and something that certainly, I think is touching is the fact that it was 6 years ago that you actually made a couple of starts in independent ball, which to me speaks to you doing that at 35, to your passion for the sport. Where did that passion start, and how did it get through you through some of your tougher moments and some of the adversity you faced in the game?
I'm fortunate to have a love for the game that at a young age it started with my brothers playing. They play baseball. They're a little bit older than I am, so I actually get to go to a lot of their games and bat boy for their games and be around a baseball field quite a bit because of, their love for the game as well. But really that continued to grow with, the group of friends that I had and, in our hometown and guys getting together, and we would go to the Little League field and play sandlot baseball, I guess, if you want to call it. We'd just have pickup games and constantly playing the game of baseball when it was during the spring and the summer. And then when I was younger, as the seasons turned, the sport went to a different focus. But baseball was always my true love, I guess, as a sport. I played other sports, but I really enjoyed baseball and just loved it growing up. So that continued to kind of feed the drive to continue to play and want to move on and get that. I was fortunate that I got the opportunity to play in college at the University of Michigan and then get drafted three times, once out of high school and twice at Michigan. It's just been kind of not a natural progression, because I put in the time and the effort and the want was there. That's one thing that I tell a lot of younger guys is just like you, the passion and the intensity that we have for the game is something that we should kind of focus in with our effort. And that's something that you can't really, sway away from. And no matter what the results are, your effort is always going to be something has to be consistent and has to be at its highest level every time you go out there. So anyway, with that said, it's just something that for me, has naturally progressed. Like I said,
you are certainly unique in a sport that becomes, it seems like at the major league level, younger each year. You're the oldest active pitcher. You're the oldest player that the Rays will have had later this month. What does that mean to you? And how do you see yourself in terms of your impact on other players in the game and the example you set for so many?
I guess when I sit back and I think about it, it's just the act of attrition. Or, you just want to continue to keep moving forward and not really sit back and relax. I don't sit there and sit back on my good games, and I don't really sit there and let my bad games beat me up. you know, so it's always focused in on the moment and focused in on the task at hand or the here and now, what is going on right now. And that's something that, you know, has continued to drive me, I guess, at an older age. It's just, and that's what I tell guys, you know, no matter how bad things are going or how good things are going, you know, you want to make your peaks and your valleys really small in this game and stay consistent throughout, you know, your entire approach every time you're coming to the field. Because when you get in between the lines, that's a different kind of mentality that you have to have. And then when you're outside the lines, you know, or away from the field, or when you're not in the box, when you're not on the mound, when you're not out in the field competing, you know, that you can have a different mindset. But when you're in the box, when I'm on the mound, or some, you know, I tell guys when they're in the box, they're competing. And, you know, for them to have the ability to understand what it is to be in that moment, not think about any outside distractions or outside opinions or other people's thoughts or what other people are saying, you know, all these other things that distract from what we're supposed to be focusing in on is executing a pitch, executing your swing, being able to focus in on the play that you're going to make in the field. But it all comes down to that, the aggressive action and the intensity that each of us can bring in those moments out on the field. It's kind of like a boxer in a ring. You know, when the bell goes off, there's somebody across the ring from you, I guess for radio purposes, want to beat you. So you have to be prepared to, in turn, be the aggressor. The point that I'm making is that the intensity and the aggressiveness that when you're out there on the field will take care of a lot of undue anxiety or stress that might be going on because they're outcome related thoughts. I tell guys to try to disassociate themselves from the outcome and focus in on the moment. To not focus in on the results is so tough in the beginning, but it gets easier as you continue to put the work in. So that's what I tell guys, that, you know, just like we go to the gym to lift weights, just like we, you know, hit balls in the cage or throw bullpens or work on our pitches, you know, during the week, you have to work on your mental side of the game as well. And that's what so much of baseball is. And that's why it's so great, because, you know, you could be as a hitter 3-for-10 and be a Hall of Famer. And as a pitcher, I think it's a little bit different. The pitching mentality, my thought is how many times the ball can come out of your hand in an outing the way you want it to. So the more times you can do that, yes, we want to win the game. Yes, we want good results. And those will come the more consistent you are with that approach. You're going to have bad games, no doubt. But if you can honestly tell yourself the ball came out of my hand the way I want it to, and, you know, you continue on that path, you're going to start to see results, I believe. But you have to be honest about it. That's the tough thing, and you can fool a lot of people, but you can't fool yourself. So
as you have spent this time with the Rays organization, you've been part of a lot of successful teams and cultures. What is different in a good way that you've seen in your short time with the Rays that you really like, and why?
Well, one thing that pops out right away is Kevin Kiermaier gets everybody together after the game. I think it's such a huge team building little moment after the game, because we just kind of highlight the great plays whatever plays there were that were big time plays or home runs, the pitching performances. But everybody who really contributed in the game kind of gets a show of appreciation. And I think that's something that I haven't seen anywhere ever in my career. And I think it's, you know, pretty cool. I shouldn't say that I haven't seen it anywhere ever, but we did, like in LA, we would do kind of player of the game. So it'd be one guy, you know, but this is different because it kind of highlights everybody, you know, not every player that plays, but guys that kind of stand out a little bit. And hey, I love it. I don't know. I think it's so cool. That and just the communication with Kevin. You know, I was with Kevin in Cleveland and also in Boston. You know, his ability to communicate in Boston and also, you know, as a player and then also as a coach in Cleveland and now as a manager has been extremely consistent. So when we were in Cleveland, you know, I had a feeling he was going to be a great manager someday. I just, you know, just from the ability to see how he, you know, understands players and have that side of obviously taking that playing side and kind of melding it with the coaching side as well, which is great. So, you know, that the communication, from Kevin, communication from Eric, just the communication, you know, front office to the players has been really good. And I think continue to try to grow those bridges between the players and the front office for ideas to get to the ultimate goal of winning. And that's the biggest thing that I've seen from organizations that I've been with who have been successful, is that we're all in this together and we're all trying to reach and attain the same goal, which is a World Series. So if there's anything that will help the organizations, like I said, that I've been with who have been successful, have been open ears to that, to any kind of suggestions of just positive steps in a positive direction for winning. Yeah, I think with the Rays, what I've seen is just the camaraderie is really good on the field. And I know off the field, it's continuing to build and guys are pulling for each other when you go to the field. That's the main thing. It's, you know, with LA going out to the mound and pitching, I knew guys like Walker and Clayton and Julio and all the guys who were on the bench watching me pitch were pulling for me just as much as they would be pulling for themselves. And then when they were out there, we would all be pulling for him just as much as whoever's turn it was the next day. You know, that's a huge kind of step in the right direction for any organization culture-wise, is getting guys to kind of feed off of each other. And what I mean by that, I mean, I see the way you're going about your business, and I see that you're doing it the right way every single day. And it's kind of like leading by example. You see it in the next guy, and then you see it in the next guy. As far as the intensity of their performances, you know, the aggressiveness, the attacking of the hitter, the challenging of the hitter, challenging every hitter to hit every pitch that you're throwing. So that's something that I'm seeing, and that's really you know, something that's great, and we're going in the right direction.
And it doesn't happen too without outside support. You've been married what, almost 14 years now, yeah, to Caitlin. What is your wife's support meant? Because you've been through so many different trials and tribulations and organizations over this time.
Yeah, I mean, she's been there through everything, and it's been amazing, to be honest, to have that support that I've been getting from my wife, Caitlin. She has been unbelievable support system as far as somebody to talk to after good games, bad games. You know, she's there. She means everything to me. She's been there from the beginning of this whole thing. So to be fortunate enough to share this opportunity with somebody who you truly love, and that you've been able to share, when I look back on it, good or bad, their wonderful life experiences, has been incredibly fortunate for me. I haven't really thought about this, I guess, until you've asked me this question. I have, but I've never really been asked this question. Just to go through the ups and downs of, you know, the last couple of years have been obviously difficult for many people, and you know, with the coronavirus and not being, I didn't see them last year for probably 2 months, I think, out of the year, and then an entire spring training. So this year, and then probably almost 2 months up to a couple of days ago, we had an off day. I was able to go home, but just the part where you don't get to see your family and know that, I know that Caitlin's at home with our son Bryce, and, you know, he's going to school and taking care of, you know, a lot of things that going on at home. I just feel fortunate that we can do that, and that she's totally supportive of and continuing to play this game of baseball. So, you know, I think that's the one thing, is that a lot of people don't talk about what their significant other or their spouse is doing to set aside so we can go ahead and play this game that we love. And that's something that I know that she has done. She's starting to find passions of her own right now, which is extremely exciting and awesome.
And knowing that, the fact that you got put on a particular, the light blue jersey for one of your starts because your son wanted you to wear that, wanted to have the team wear it, kind of makes it all the more special.
Yeah, absolutely. I had asked about, I know it was only really a Sunday thing. You know, I was kind of, well, if it's going to be in our locker and it's one of the uniforms, I was thinking, why can we wear it every other day of the week or whenever during the week when we're at home? You know, I like the light blues. You know, I think last year in Minnesota, we had a kind of that powder blue, the old throwback to the 70s there, the old powder blue. I enjoyed that last year. And you know, I know our son did too. So, you know, for the team to say, yes, that was That was very kind of him. So, you know, just let him know that I'm thinking about him when he puts on the game.
And from a family standpoint, obviously family is critical to you. I just want to make sure we touch on the foundation work that you guys are doing, especially in 2013, you lost your other son, Brooks.
He died of a rare genetic disease. And we were able to work with Mass General Hospital. We came in contact at that time with the doctor who was in charge of genetics at MGH. His name is David Sweetser, Dr. David Sweetser. And we were not able to identify the genetic disease that he had passed from until a few years afterwards. He had called us and, you know, he didn't give up on trying to find out what the rare genetic disease was that Brooks passed from. And he called us and told us that it was Galloway-Moet syndrome. It was an extremely rare syndrome that he passed away from. He was able to give us that closure in some senses that we were able to know what it was caused the difficulties that he was going through while he was here. We were very extremely grateful that he was able to find an answer for us, but also we saw his drive to help other families out. You know, he was with us from the time Brooks was born, you know, stuck with us and continued to, you know, give us updates as far as how research was going and where they were making strides in the field of genetics and how much it's kind of grown over the last, you know, 5 years. Even every year there's these, you know, kind of new advances in genetics that they're finding more and more answers out for families and for the children and others that are having issues that are unidentified. You know, in that we decided to start the Field of Genes, which is run through Mass General Hospital. People could go to fieldofgenes.org. That will take them directly to the Mass General website where, you know, you can read about Brooks and also make a donation. The donations would be going to David Sweetser and the field of genetics at Mass General. And the reason why we did that is because a lot of genetic testing is, you know, not covered by insurance, and it gets very expensive and adds up quickly. So they've been able to help multiple families out and get them answers through the testing that has been provided, not only through Field of Genes, but also other sources of beneficiaries that have donated. So it's obviously close to our family, but also in a way we were able to honor our son Brooks and, you know, continue to do some good work. So we're excited about it. You know, hopefully it continues to grow. We don't know really what the next step is with Field of Genes or where we're going to go. We just know that we want to help families get answers and understand that it's a difficult time when you're kind of, you know, you feel alone. You feel like there's nobody who's going to kind of provide assistance or help. So, you know, we, like I said, we're very fortunate to have Dr. Sweetser and his relentless, you know, pursuit for an answer.
Rich, we appreciate you sharing your story, and we hope there are many great moments with the Rays this season. Thanks so much for being with us on This Week in Rays Baseball.
Yeah, thank you, Neil. Thank you for having me.
And that's Rich Hill, and we certainly appreciate Rich and all of our guests on the program today, Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Rays, Eric Neander, as well as Dura Manager Brady Williams, Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times, and also prospect Alexander Ovais. If you ever have something you want to hear on the show, all you have to do is tweet me at Neil Solons. Hey, the Rays Rookies Kids Club, presented by Outback, is back with swag. Kids receive a duffel bag, AL Championship socks, and access to exclusive digital experiences with Rays players and staff. Memberships are limited. Join today, RaysBaseball.com/RaysRookies, and raise up. Next week, Brett Phillips and much more. Thanks to Derek Dubose, my producer. I'm Neil Solons. Stay tuned. The pregame show is next. This is the Rays Baseball Network.
Thank you for listening to This Week in Rays Baseball.
Breaking ball lifted to the air, way up there, into right field and deep. Judge is going back towards the corner at the wall. Gone! And the Rays jump in front 4-1.
If you missed any of the show, catch it on archive at RaysBaseball.com/radio.
With first and second, the 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss! He struck him out!
Keep it right here. The Rays pregame show is next.